Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. Let's see. My name is Diane B., and I'm a recovered compulsive eater. I live in New York. Today is Tuesday, May 16th, 2023. Today we're reading from the Big Book, and we're at page 81 in the second paragraph, beginning with Our Design for Living and ending with Whom She Can Vent Jealousy. Today's readers are 12 Steps, Nancy C., 12 Traditions, Nancy, I'm sorry, let's try again, 12 Traditions, Mary P. Text today is Jordan L., page 164, Vision for You is Eileen M., and our backup reader is Janice P.M. Newcomer greeter today is Lorraine H., and announcements are Lois P. And thank you to everyone who's doing service. Thank you to everyone who is filling in today and subbing. This keeps this meeting really, really strong. I love it. Reference numbers. Excuse me. Reference numbers for the share ID for this meeting yesterday, Monday, 5/15/23, or May 15, 2023, 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 20,260. And this morning, Tuesday, May 16th, 2023, the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 20,262. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We're self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. So, Nancy C., can you please read us the 12 steps?
Absolutely. Good morning, everyone. Nancy C., gratefully recovered this morning by God's grace in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Pass.
Thank you, Nancy. Next, Mary P., will you please read us the 12 traditions?
Yes, thank you, Diane. This is Mary P. in Austin, Texas, and these are the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thanks for letting me be of service, and I'll pass.
Thanks, Mary. Excuse me, how our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our absence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There's no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And in order to hear everyone clearly, we request that you do not use the speaker function on your phone. So today we resume our study of the Big Book. We're on page 81 in the second paragraph, beginning with our design for living. And we're reading only one paragraph. So today we're going to have Jordan L. to get us started. Jordan?
Hey, good morning, Diane. Thank you for moderating for us this morning. excuse me. my name's Jordan L. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Colorado and very be abstinent and on a meeting of Overeaters Anonymous this morning. and grateful for this paragraph. Even though I gotta say these are tough paragraphs to share on here. so our design for living is not a one-way street. It is as good for the wife, for the wife as for the husband. If we can forget, so can she. It is better, however, that one does not needlessly name a person upon whom she can vent jealousy. so first off here, we kind of want to set aside the gender roles. But when I read these paragraphs, sometimes it helps for me to turn the husband into the alcoholic or the compulsive overeater and call them that, and turn the wife into the codependent, so that I have a clearer idea of where it is that I fit into these instructions here. what it's telling us here is that this design for living is not a one-way street. that there are, we talked about this. We talked about this last week. That the instructions here for making amends that we've gone through thus far have called for taking pretty direct action, whereas starting pretty much at the top of this page, what they're saying is that direct action may actually cause further harm. So we have to have some ways of taking action, doing something about it. It mentioned that in the previous paragraph, right? It says we usually have to do something about it. So taking some action or doing something about it that does not cause further harm. In talking about our design for living, the fact that it's not a one-way street, this is something that is good for both the alcoholic and the codependent. And so in this situation, I am the alcoholic or the compulsive overeater, right? And I have to start communicating with my partner about this design for living since it's not a one-way street. And this is good. This is like some good practice in communication, in like non-controlling communication, because I can't force anyone to do this, including my partner, right? What I have to do is communicate with that person in a productive way, about this new design for living that I have adopted. If that person wants to know about the situation and what happened, if my partner wants to know about the situation and what happened, it really is for each individual alcoholic and their higher power and their sponsor to decide like how much of that it can be revealed without causing further harm, right? And it's saying here, I'll wrap up, it's saying here that we definitely don't name that person because that could most definitely cause further harm. So thanks for letting me share. That's all I got.
Thanks, Jordan. Thanks for getting us started. So I'm now ready to take people's names. Please give me your name and the initial of your last name. And please try to go one at a time. Star one to unmute. Who would like to share this morning?
Donna B.
Donna B. Gotcha.
Ronnie B.
Ronnie C, gotcha.
Deb E.
Deb E. Anybody else? Star one to unmute. Okay, we've got a group of three. Excellent. Donna B, Ronnie C, Deb E. Okay, Donna, you're up.
Good morning. This is Donna B., recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic, calling from Denver, Colorado. Thank you for kicking us off, Jordan. I appreciate that replacement of words to the alcoholic and codependent. That's new to me, and I'm going to reflect on that as I read through these paragraphs. The theme across these paragraphs over the last few days has been that I do have to take responsibility for my actions. I have to acknowledge the harm that I've caused, but I have to be especially mindful of not causing further harm or further damage to anyone, really. And what this is saying to me is that I have to be careful with the words that I choose with the intention of creating well-being and restitution in the relationship. But I can't control or manage or predict what the other person's outcome or perception will be. And this reminds me of the prayer that I learned in the fourth step, where I ask God to remove my fear and to direct my attention to what God would have me be. also the prayer where I ask God to create my relationship ideals and to give me the strength and the power to live up to those ideals. So while I'm in this step of taking action, there's still a space and an opportunity for surrender. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thanks, Donna. Ronnie C., followed by Deb E.
Thank you. This is Ronnie B., as in boy, in Missouri. Thank you.
Sorry.
Big deal. Ronnie, okay. So a lot about amends has been coming up for me in various ways, be it daily amends or long-term amends. But the big thing is to make a direct amends when that is what is due, and to not try to skirt around that because that is painful. And boy, sometimes I would like to take the back road, but that's not the road to take for me. It's actually to acknowledge face-to-face a lot what has happened. But the bigger thing is, yes, what am I going to do long-term? What is what you would have me be, God? I love the fear prayer. I forget the fear prayer, but I love the fear prayer. Direct my attention toward what you would have me be. And when I know what he would have me be, then the steps I need to take to be that become clearer. And if not alone, then with another person, someone I'm doing a 10th step with, or a sponsor. So I need to be aware of that in terms of ongoing relationships and some relationships that could use mending, and that I am finally ready to say, I surrender. Please take this relationship. Have me be what you want me to be and let go of the outcome. And that's a really big thing, is letting go of the outcome. Today I'm doing it much better than I ever had, and that is not to toot a horn, because there are still times I'm like, Jesus, I did everything I could and still, right? But the truth is, I'm not in charge of the outcome, but I am in charge of the income. So I really do need to pray, meditate, and ask for God's help. And I did that this morning for two relationships in my life. So I shouldn't be surprised when change starts to happen, when there's movement in my life as a result of me praying, because prayer does change me, but prayer can also move mountains. So prayer can change things, not the way I'm thinking they should be changed, because a big light bulb that went off last year in my life, after so many decades in the program, is that when God does what's best for me, God also does what's best for everyone concerned. And, you know, when I first realized that everybody was get better off, I'm like, what the hell? I'm the one that's praying. You know, so am I selfish a lot of the time? Absolutely. But if I tell on myself, I can have that selfishness removed. Anyway, thank you all for your service, and I'm going to pass.
Thanks, Ronnie B., as in book. I'm sorry I messed that up. Okay, Deb E., you're up.
Thanks. Hi, this is Debbie, recovered compulsive overeater in Israel. This paragraph I have mixed emotions about, because it kind of worked out really well that it's the paragraph we're reading today, because I think I would have gladly skipped it, but I felt compelled to share on it. So this sentence, it says, though there may be justifiable exceptions, and though we wish to lay down no rule of any sort, we have often found this the best course to take. So I feel like I completely ignored there may be justifiable exceptions, and just went into, oh, we shouldn't, you know, we shouldn't talk about it for years. And in my case, it is, I have an exception to this rule, and I really like how the big book is so black and white about what we need to do to recover. this, there's enough humility for them to have said, like, we don't know about every single situation, every detail. We can't tell you for sure what's going to be right for you. And in my case, there was something from before my marriage that I just, you know, refused to talk about more because there was trauma associated with it. And now that I'm finally dealing with that trauma, I can see how I just, you know, my husband wanted to talk about it and I refused to talk about it. And I kind of hid behind this paragraph from the big book going, well, we don't have to say things. We don't have to give details. Someone might get hurt. But that wasn't the case in my situation. I was the only one who felt like I was going to get hurt more. And so I've been thinking about this paragraph a lot recently, and that's why it's so interesting that it's a paragraph being read today, because as I reread it, I saw that, no, it does actually cover the situation, like situations where there might be reason to give more detail, especially if the other person is affected. And so it's been very humbling to realize, you know, there's that slogan in OA where, you know, take what you want and leave the rest, and how for some people that could be the worst thing to say. But for me, it was what kept me here in the beginning and had me stay. And then on my own, I just kept adding more and more and more every year. And with this one, I feel like I did the opposite. You know, you don't have to give details. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, like that was my ticket to not dig deeper and not do more work. And I also have an appreciation for it is really like that analogy of the layers of the onion really does apply.
Gentle reminder.
Okay, thank you. I'll wrap up in my life because there's, as I go on, I discover more and more and understand more and more. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Deb E. in Israel. I'm ready to take more names than the initial of your last name. I just want to remind everyone that we're on page 81, second paragraph, beginning with our design for living and ending with whom she can vent jealousy. Star one to unmute. Anybody want to step up to the plate? The water's warm. Jump in.
Barbara
Here we
E.
go.
Okay.
Barbara E.
In New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Shirley D. in Ventura, California.
Thank you, Shirley D. in California. One more? Can I get another group of three?
Yeah.
Who is that? I'm sorry. Say it again, please.
Christy M. from Oregon.
Christy M. Okay, from Oregon, you said, right? Okay, so I've got Barb E., Shirley D., and Christy M. All right, Barb E., you're up. Thank you.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I'm so grateful to be here with you today on this beautiful Tuesday in New Jersey. Well, I thank you all for sharing. I just wanted to say I can't relate to having affairs that I had to share with my husband, but I have been having an affair with food all my life. And I had to, there's a saying, it's called RAIN, R-A-I-N, recognize my emotions that always brought me back to the food. And A for RAIN, allowing and accepting, and I in RAIN, investigate them, and finally N, nurture myself, because I'm a liar. And that's one of the main things I had to accept and recognize and making a sincere apology for and change my ways. I would sneak into my son's room. He's adult. He lives with us. Take his medicines out of his bottle. Do all kinds of things that were so invasive. So I had to make a sincere apology and then change my ways. Same thing with my husband. I didn't have to sneak into his bedroom. I lived there with him. But I would sneak into his wallet. I'd sneak food into my room. I'd chew it at night, and my husband would roll over and say, "Barbara, are you eating?" Yes, I had to change everything about myself. But I recognize I can't do it by myself. I need a power that is not me. It may not be a God up in the sky. I really don't care. And I have to remain teachable and humble every day, not humiliating myself, not lying to people I love, not gossiping, not comparing, because to compare for me is to despair. And that place where I built up my resentments, I'm going to eat at you because I resent you. I think you're better than me. I think you're smarter than me. I think. It's all about me. And I had to change the me into we. We are all together now, reaching out for love and understanding beyond our wildest dreams. I tried to listen to the Monday meeting, but the 7A meeting today didn't put your contact, the information, the code in for your meeting. So I missed hearing to your wonderful meeting. And I want to thank all of you, I guess, maybe close to 200, who are sharing their strength, wisdom, and courage with us, one footstep at a time. I pass.
Thank you, Barbara E. in New Jersey. Next, we have Cheryl A. D. in California. Star one, please, Cheryl. I want to unmute,
I'm so
Cheryl.
Sorry.
We don't hear. There you
go. Cheryl AD, so sorry about that. I was pressing the wrong button.
No problem.
Thank you so much, moderator, for your service. And thank you, Jordan, for your lead share. I wanted to just pipe up because I had an experience here with this in the past where I felt I needed to confess something in a relationship that had happened while the person and I were not together. We were broken up. Now, this person actually had an engagement ring for me, and me confessing this thing, this involvement I had with somebody else while we were broken up, that caused a lot of harm. And it also resulted in this person causing, creating some chaos. And what it brings me back to is page 62, selfishness, self-centeredness that we think is the root of our troubles. So this was long before I'd ever worked the steps. I thought I was working the steps, but I wasn't. And it was driven by a fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. It was me in an unrecovered, untreated state, driven by self and fear. And so God is good, or higher power is good, because it turned out that everything turned out the way it was supposed to. But that is not the way I would go about it today with God's help and wise people who guide me. Today, I get to work these steps and unblock myself from connection to a higher power who can guide me in how I relate with other people, so that I can do so in a way that does not harm them or me or anyone. And my alarm's going off. I don't know if anybody can hear that. But thank you for letting me share this morning. So grateful to be part of this recovery. I pass.
Thank you so much, Cheryl. Now we have Christy M. Christy, are you with a K or a CH? And where are you from, please? Star one to unmute, Christy.
Hello, this is Christy M. from Oregon.
Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, I'm Christy M., grateful, recovering bulimic anorexic from Oregon. And I really appreciate all who did service today. I was really thinking a lot about this reading and like a lot of the speakers have shared about kind of putting myself in the different shoes of the people in the reading. And something that I guess is that I've learned is, you know, this is a family disease. Like I would often think that, you know, just my food and my weight and the way I cope with life was just something that impacted me. It's just like sometimes a drinker thinks they're drinking or just impacts them. But, you know, this is a disease of our body, minds, and souls. And I could see, you know, part of recovery is seeing the impact of our disease on the people that we love around us. And what they say is to change a dynamic in a family, oftentimes it's just one person that needs to change the whole thing. And I was listening to a podcast the other day or just hearing a story about how, you know, a parent who started meditating, like it's just changed the whole dynamic of the family and their teenage kids. And so this is just like a great reminder to me that this is a family disease. And when I go to my disease to cope with life, you know, it does. It harms the people around me, even though I can't see it all the time. You know, I go back into my ways of controlling, my ways of being critical to myself and others, and that's really harmful. You know, it impacts those around me. In that, my recovery is kind of, you know, a family recovery, and it's worth it. It's not just about the food, and that these little gifts of recovery is not just a gift that I give to myself. It's a gift that I give to all the people that I love. You know, it is an act of service because they get, you know, my kids get a mother who's more present and engaged and patient and loving and forgiving. And, you know, my mother gets a daughter that is more present and engaged and, you know, more of a heart of service. And, you know, when we think about, like, we are doing recovery for ourselves, you know, to not be in the insanity of our disease, but it's also something we do for the people that we love. And just hearing, you know, this dynamic between these spouses is a good reminder of just how much my illness hurts the people that I care about, and that it's a gift that I give to myself and I give to them. And that, you know, recovery and getting out of the insanity of our disease can also have a really powerful impact on the dynamics of our relationship. You know, I use a lot of the 12 steps, you know, with my kids or any, you know, like when they're having a hard time.
Just a reminder.
Thank you. I'll wrap up. Just admitting when we're powerless, turning things over to God. You know, I get to model that and live the 12 steps, and then that gets passed on to my own children. So with that, I'll pass.
Thanks, Christy. Next, I can take some more names and numbers. We still have time. Not numbers, sorry. Names and last initials. We're on page 81 on the second paragraph, our design for living, and ending on the next page, with whom she can vent jealousy. Excuse me. Anybody want to step up? Star one to unmute. It's a short paragraph, but it's got a lot in it.
Hi, what page are we on?
We're on page 81 of the second paragraph, beginning with our design for living. Our design for living is not a one-way street. It is as good for the wife as for the husband. If we can forget, so can she. It is better, however, that one does not needlessly name a person upon whom she can vent jealousy. Who would like to comment on that? Star one to unmute so I can take your name.
This is Kristen. I'm a compulsive eater. I can share on that.
Okay, what's the initial of your last name?
C.
C. Okay, hold on, Kristen. Anybody else want to share on this? I'm ready to take more names.
Miriam H.
Oh, Mary?
Miriam H. from California.
Miriam H. Got it. Miriam H. Anybody else?
Cheryl S. As in Sam.
Got it. Okay, so I've got Kristen C., Miriam H., Cheryl S. Okay, great. Let's go with this group. Okay, Kristen, star one to unmute, please, and tell us where you're from.
Hi, I'm Kristen. I'm a compulsive eater, and grateful to be here, grateful for the big book. And I'm from the Southwest. I'm in Mountain Time. I can't speak for others. I'm guessing it's a little quiet because of the topic and also that it's recorded, so that's a little intimidating. But what I liked about this paragraph is that it's basically a cautionary tale that spilling my guts as part of my ninth step isn't always the best course of action, even though that might seem counterintuitive to me. It might seem like, okay, I wronged somebody or somebodies, and I should let them know that I wronged them and how I wronged them and apologize and then work to work my steps on that to not commit that trespass again. And it seems like that's a good idea, but in some situations it's really not a good idea. You know, if it involves a couple and the couple's still together and it could damage that couple's relationship, then that's not a good idea to relieve the burden of my guilt at someone else's expense. Then it's really not a good idea. Or if me sharing, ill thoughts or feelings I had towards somebody, and maybe they didn't even know I had ill feelings towards them, you know, then they don't really need to know about it. Maybe I can do a different kind of amends, like just pray for that person or ask my higher power to forgive me, you know, for the resentment I had. There's a prayer in the big book that a friend of mine from AA turned me on to towards the back of the book, that I can pray for somebody as part of my ninth step that doesn't involve having to say anything to that person at all. It's just praying for them because perhaps me saying something to that person will be more harmful than helpful to that person. So I always have to take the other person or persons into consideration when looking at making an amends. The point is, as I said, is not to relieve the burden of my own guilt at someone else's expense. That's not the point of it. So that's what I got out of that paragraph. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Kristen. Next, we have Miriam H.
Hi, I'm Miriam H. From Southern California. Happy to be here this morning. You know, I think that this paragraph is talking about the specifics of how we need to tread lightly when we go for our amends, especially amends between spouses that are maintaining their marriage. And, you know, I'm looking at this a little bit differently since I've been studying the big book and have been going through the steps, in that I'm an addict. you know, and my husband lives with an addict, and I don't do things like everybody else, you know. I am just, you know, and he's lived with me all these years, you know, we've been together all these years, and, you know, I have, you know, the snow is melting on my addiction, and I see that, you know, my covers get pulled much more in how we relate to each other now, and it is because of doing my steps. It's doing my nightly review. It's doing my prayer and meditation. I want my relationship to be about a living amends, not pointing finger. You know, I still can point the finger and arouse jealousy if, you know, I want to be into my defects of character. And, you know, it's a sexual relations are a tough subject for me. I had to be very willing to be very thorough with my sponsor about going through my lists of people that I had harmed and before going ahead and making amends. So I'd agree with the book. I wouldn't point somebody out and arouse suspicion. I keep the focus on God's will for me today and towards a changed behavior and a renewed interest in the relationship. So, and today, you know, before I used to, 8 years ago, I used to sneak out to OA meetings and not say where I was going because I didn't want my husband to know. And now, you know, it's my attending meetings and being in the fellowship is has become a daily part of our life. So thank you all. I'm past.
Thanks, Miriam. Next, we have Cheryl F. If you could tell us where you're from, please.
Good morning. This is Cheryl S. from Nevada. Can I be heard okay? I'm driving.
Yep, loud and clear.
Okay, great. I just wanted to say, I'm Cheryl S., grateful, recovered compulsive overeater. And, you know, I've been on both sides of this coin. And truth without compassion is very, very, very self-centered. And like I said, I've been hurt by that, and I've hurt others in that regard. And to me, it's just another reminder of the importance of a sponsor and going over these things with a sponsor. And I think, you know, if you have an amends, or if I had an amends to make in this regard, and I truly, truly wanted to make the amends, but going to that person would be hurtful to them. If I'm willing to come up with an alternative way to make amends, then I think I truly do want to make an amends. But if I don't want to, something I'm thinking of would be like maybe volunteering at an abusive relationship house where people go if they're in an abusive relationship, or you know, volunteering at my church, something like that. So there's a lot of ways that, you know, we can make amends for our behavior without hurting another person. And talking to your sponsor is key. Because there's this miraculous thing that happens. Your sponsor is so smart, even if they've not been in that situation, because they have the power of God behind them. And so many times I've said things to a sponsee, or a sponsor has said something to me that was so perfect, and either I say or they say, I have no idea where that came from. I never think that way. But just by sharing it with another person, with your sponsor, and coming up with a plan to make amends without hurting another person, I think that's what that paragraph is speaking to. Thank you for letting me share. Thank you, everybody, for your service, and have a wonderful day.
Thanks, Cheryl. Okay, we have time for one, possibly two short shares. If anybody would like to jump in, star one to unmute so I can take your name, please.
Hi, Lorraine N. in Oregon.
Lorraine? Okay, got you, Lorraine. Okay, why don't you start, and we'll see if we have time for anybody else.
Okay.
Thanks, Lorraine.
Sure. It will be a short share. Yeah, these last several days dealing with amends and all of this, it is tough, you know. I mean, I don't like to look at that Lorraine that really needs a lot of work. And I don't have a spouse, but I have family and friends and acquaintances and the checker in the supermarket and all these other relationships. And I certainly have been very jealous, envious of people, places, and things. And it still crops up. You know, I'm in this program, but I'm not a mutant. I'm human. And I have human feelings and emotions all the time. And I agree with the previous speaker that it's super important to discuss things with other recovered members in this program. I don't usually run it past just one person if I have something serious happening. But this program just helps me get back on track. You know, it's a kind of a straight line and I weave in and out. And without this program, I don't know where I'd be. I'm grateful every day that I have it. So it's a daily walk for me. And as Maya Angelou said, do the best you can until you know better. Then when you know better, do better. And that's what I try to do one day at a time. Thanks for letting me share.
Sorry, I was muted. Thanks, Lorraine. We have time for a very short share if anybody wants to jump right in. Okay.
Hi.
What a great meeting. Okay,
hi.
You got a minute.
I just wanted to say coming back. I'm just coming back. My name is Victoria. Did I leave my number?
Not yet, but you will have a chance to. Right now, we're still recorded. We don't take numbers. Welcome back, Victoria. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Yep, you're welcome. Okay, thank you to everyone who shared. Where are we? I'm sorry. Okay, we'll now close the reading. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And Eileen M., will you please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Good morning. This is Eileen M., a grateful recovered compulsive overeater in New Hampshire. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.